The views and opinions expressed by the guests, callers, and hosts on this and all Rents Radio Network programs do not necessarily reflect or agree with those of the network, its commercial sponsors, its radio station affiliates, or internet broadcast platforms. In these controversial times, we believe the First Amendment and freedom of the press are absolutely essential to the survival of our nation. Thank you. And now, enjoy the program.
Okay, here we are. It's Friday, and we're going to have a great program tonight all the way through. Admiral Cooper is back with us tonight to talk and share some amazing material that he got during his... In fact, I think we should give him his Knight's Cross and swords for this. He has really scored. When you hear the history, the real history, coming alive tonight, I think many of you will never forget it. It's that impressive. Please go to the homepage at Rents and look on the left-hand side in Guests and look under Harry and click on the photos. And you'll take a couple minutes to load, maybe in some cases, but you must load those up as we walk through and really discover history as it really happened. Not as the revisionists, the wrong kind of revisionists, like to make us believe that it occurred. Hello, Admiral Cooper. Welcome back, sir.
Good evening. Good evening, Jeff.
Yeah. These pictures are stunning, and I can't wait to hear the descriptions of them. Let's tell our listeners, in case they missed the first half of the two-part series, when the trip occurred, where you went, and what your hopes for it were.
I was there this July, almost the entire month of July, and I was looking forward to learning more from Lawrence DeMello, who is the world's expert on Borman, and also from my two doctor friends down there, Franco and Christian, and they have done incredible research into a couple ladies that we'll talk about, as well as Mengele and where he was living down there. We also, I'm watching my words very carefully, so
yes,
I
noticed. Yeah.
Lawrence is going to beat me up if I say the wrong things, but she has done great research also on Gestapo Mueller. So I went down there to learn this, not so much with Hitler in South America anymore. We know he went there. You have to be, you knowing what we know, seeing what we have learned, you got to be just brain dead stupid to believe he committed suicide still. A lot of people do, and that's nothing, against them. But, I mean, once you see everything that we have dug up, there can't be any doubt. Hitler did not commit suicide. Eva Braun did not commit suicide. Mengele, we knew he got away. Bormann, there were thousands that went down there.
Maybe even more. And as I've shared with you and others on the program, I did know someone who knew a P-51 pilot, and at the end of hostilities in the war, his squadron of P-51 pilots was kept over there, and they were retrained and checked out on the DC-4 four-engine transport. There seemingly was a whole fleet of these things, I was told, secondhand, but I believe it, that had long-range fuel tanks and so forth. And these DC-4s were being flown by the P-51 fighter pilots after the war ended, and they were carrying cargo back and forth. They'd go to the Canaries and then the Canaries across to Argentina and perhaps other locations in South America. And in the back of the plane, the pilots never went back there. They didn't know what was going on. It was closed off. There were cases being loaded in sometimes, and people being loaded on others, and sometimes there were cases and people being loaded on the planes. But they were all flown down there. So the Americans, very secretly, were flying many high-ranking officials and their families from the Third Reich down to South America after the war ended.
Yep, that probably was part of the quid pro quo that I mentioned earlier about why nobody went after Hitler and those guys, because we got all the massive technology, and also that was the biggest part, the quid pro quo. But also they paid off Juan Perón so much to where he was protecting them, not only just protecting them, but protecting them with his entire army.
Exactly.
That was just an incredible amount of stuff that we're still learning.
Right. Well, this, like I say, you should be decorated for this trip. This trip was amazing. And thanks
nice
to...
Nice cross with oak leaf and swords, huh?
Yeah.
Okay.
No diamonds yet.
No diamonds, working on it.
Yeah. And thanks to Lawrence for all of her invaluable help and assistance. I don't know her, but I know of her. And what an asset to have down there. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, she is so sharp with her research and stuff, and just a wonderful lady. She always, whenever I go down there, I spend the last, 3, 4, 5 days, whatever, of my trip at her ranch.
Recovering.
Winding down.
Yeah.
And also this time, learning a bunch more and freezing my ass off. It was winter time down there.
Yeah. Well, after those roads in Paraguay.
Oh, God.
Yeah, it's amazing. You had to put your back brace on, in case you folks don't remember that. The roads are that bad down there. We looked at the pictures last visit, and they're something else.
Yeah, and thank God I remembered to bring my back brace, because I'm told a broken back never heals, and my back.
No, that's a broken heart never heals. Sorry.
Well, yeah, but also if you break your back, mine was a compression fracture, and it's. They say your vertebrae is kind of like a Dixie cup that somebody steps on.
Hmm. So, well, that's amazing. Harry literally jumped off the roof and landed on his head and somehow left 5 days later for another trip to South America. Or was
that was
six?
A year ago. Yeah, I landed. Boy, I was unconscious for about 10 minutes and babbling, and my wife thought I became a Democrat.
Oh, God.
But, tough old Irish head, I guess.
Well, you made it. And this was a great trip.
This was.
Just an astonishing trip. And I we've talked off air, and there are things, just amazing historical treasures still just waiting down there for Harry to come back and continue to try to connect the dots.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Let's go to the pictures.
Let's go to the pictures. Also,
I hope all of you had them load up.
And much as I sound like a groupie on Jerry Springer, I want to give a shout out to Jack Goodyear, one of our members since 1984 or 85. And he's the one who finances all our trips. There's no Shark Hunter's money ever used on our trips. Jack funds all of them except one. And there's a fellow who does not want his name being told. So he financed one, but Goodyear is financing every other trip we've ever gone down there with.
Jack, if you're listening, and I'm sure you are, you have been responsible directly then for the vast amount of knowledge that we have about World War II's aftermath, and I can't even begin to thank you. So
yeah, there's no way I could have done this on my own, because it's Shark Hunters, money goes right back into running Shark Hunters, and I don't have that kind of money, and thank God for Jack.
Yeah, well, indeed. All right, salute Jack. Mm-hmm. Amen. Okay, picture number one. It looks like a crayon drawing almost, pencil, colored pencils. For those of you who can't see it, there's a building in the background with four arched doorways. Two or three people coming out, one with hands held up and perhaps in greeting, and then several people in the front looking at them, walking toward them. So what do we got here?
This is a drawing done by that lady.
The mystery lady.
Yeah, Nora Daisy. And we'll tell you about her in the last closing 10 minutes of your show. excuse me. She had this monster fat scrapbook she kept about 6 or 8 inches thick. And I've seen it. I've held it in my hands. And this was is the property of the two doctors, Franco and Christiane. And this is the front. This is the main entrance of a resort in Paraguay. And you notice the date 1962, which I assume is when she did it. All right, before we start talking about that particular resort, when we were on our way through Paraguay, testing the toughness of our rented truck on those damn roads, we'd go through little villages, and one of them had a German name, the village, and little stores and houses on either side of the road. And then all of a sudden, bingo, there's this huge, big hotel, very well-maintained, but fairly old.
What's the countryside like?
At that point, it's pretty flat with a little bit of rolling, but not much. It's pretty flat.
Trees?
And the ground is all red clay. Everything in Paraguay is red clay.
A lot of trees?
Yeah, some trees, yeah. You go through areas where there's trees, and then you go through areas where there's farms, and then cattle grazing, et cetera.
Okay, so, let me rewind just a little bit here. What you're seeing is a drawing from a scrapbook. All right, this is no ordinary scrapbook. This is a very thick scrapbook, literally documenting the life of the unknown female who owned it and created it.
Yep.
And what this person did was apparently draw to recreate things that she had witnessed, seen, and knew about. These are like snapshots, like photographs.
Exactly.
Okay? Yep. This is a mystery woman. We'll tell you who it is later. And you won't believe it, but it's true. So
that she did, pardon me for stepping on you there.
All right.
At the end of the show, we'll tell your listeners how to get the book that the two doctors wrote, and it's just jam-packed with pictures.
This is a reproduction of the scrapbook to a large degree?
Well, a lot of the pictures are in there, plus the chronology of how they met her, how they found out who she really was, and how they proved she was who she was. And then at the end, as you know already, we have a parallel. Another guy who didn't even know these two doctors, didn't know anything about them, his story exactly parallels what they learned from this lady. So there's just absolutely no doubt it's accurate.
Is she
research?
Is she passed on now?
Oh yeah.
All right. So they got the book. The scrapbook, not from her directly.
No, it was from her directly. Yep.
So they did get it from her directly.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. The lady doctor, Christiane, is a gynecologist, and she started treating this woman as an indigent book.
All right.
But then they found out who she really was, mm-hmm. and that's all in the book, too. And incredible research. And like I say, there's a parallel path from another person who didn't even know the doctors, uh-huh. but knew this woman.
Now, keep in mind that the book we're talking about, that the doctors created,
yep.
has been translated fully into English, and you can
yep.
get it. And
yep.
Jeff is going to get this book as quickly as he can order it.
Phenomenal. Yeah, it's incredible. Get it on Kindle right now. We're trying to find a way to narrow the book down a little bit, but I don't think there's going to be any way
can
to
we
cut
get
it down.
A hands-on copy?
We're working on that. It's 1,200 pages long, Jeff. Jesus, it's like the Manhattan phone book, but it's jammed with information. What do you cut out? I don't know.
And I don't know how you translate. I guess every page would have to be translated where there is German writing.
Well, it's already translated on the Kindle version.
Mm-hmm.
But just converting that into paper, the book would be thicker than it is wide, I think.
I'll still buy one. I would love to be able to get one. I think they have print-on-demand books now.
Okay.
You can work a deal with these people, and they'll scan it, and, you know, 10 orders come in, and they'll run 10 copies.
Right, but 1,320 pages, that's what it is.
Well, you're going to have to pay for it. Pages. You pay $50 for the book, or $75, whatever. This is a coffee table book.
It's a damn good
and then
book,
some.
Whatever.
Yeah.
But we're working on that.
All right. Okay, so we got our first drawing.
We went through this one little village with a German mm-hmm. name, and there's this big fancy hotel, the Hotel Stauffenberg.
No kidding.
And if you remember, what's his name, Tom Cruise, when he tried to blow up Adolf Hitler there in that movie Operation Valkyrie.
Yeah.
It was Count Schenk Klaus von Stauffenberg who tried to blow him up, and the Stauffenbergs were and still are a very powerful and wealthy family in Germany. So I guess maybe they branched out. We didn't stop. We buzzed on by, and we found a very nice restaurant down there. excellent food, and it's kind of a German style looking place. And when we came back some days later, I think it was Sunday evening, they had a beer garden in operation, and they were playing kind of Bavarian music out there in this restaurant.
And this is out in the middle of kind of nowhere?
Yeah, pretty much. Everything in Paraguay is in the middle of nowhere.
Uh-huh.
They got a road that goes wherever it goes, and every so often there's a wide spot in the road, and there's a village with stuff along both sides. And
uh-huh.
the bigger villages might have some side streets, but a pretty primitive place.
Right.
So if you look at photo two now, that's a photo I took of the front of this place. I only got the first of those four doors, but there they are, exactly like Nora Daisy drew them in 1962.
Okay, keep that year in mind. So look at picture number one, and what you're seeing below is that picture. Although it's a close-up, she was obviously drawing it from a further perspective. So she got all four doors there.
Yeah.
And the doors look like they're bricked up, Harry.
They're bricked up now. A new entrance has been built.
Uh-huh.
I don't know why. It seemed like it looked pretty good to me, but it's a massive, huge resort that was built. I don't know when it was built, but it was built before the war, obviously, quite some time. And I'm not going to say the name of it or where it's at because...
No need.
No need, yeah.
I like that wall. That's a nice way to handle indigenous rock.
They got rocks there. They got bunches of rocks there.
Yeah.
And bricks. And like I say, everything is red clay. The rest of the photos, item three.
Mm-hmm.
That's a way into one of the courtyards. Four, there's steps down.
Wait a minute, I'm going to look at number three. There's the rock architecture again with mortar of some kind. And we're looking at something that was built in the 30s, probably, huh?
Yeah, close to 100 years ago.
Wow, nice condition, beautiful arches, look at them.
Yeah, and as I told you before, it's still in operation, but they don't have any customers.
They don't have any pavement on the roads there either, so
no, that's
probably
sure.
Why.
Yeah, just beat you to death.
So you could go in there, check in, get a room, and there'd be a place to get something to eat, but there's just no business.
Pretty much. Mm-hmm. When we were there, we stopped for lunch, and there was only one other couple in there, and there were us four people, and then a couple at another table spoke. The guy spoke perfect English. I thought he was from the U.S., but no, he was from Paraguay, but he studied English, and his speaking was perfect. He offered to take our picture at the table, so we've got a lot more photos on the website, sharkhunters.com, and go to previous tours. I couldn't put all the photos here, or we'd be here till 3 o'clock in the morning.
It wouldn't bother me any. All right, so back to picture number one.
Back to one.
Madam X drew this picture, showing three people going up to the hotel and some people there greeting them in 1962. Just remember that, okay? All right, now we go to picture number four. That again, is very attractive. I like the architecture, the brickwork.
Yeah, this place is on so many different levels, and you got stairways up, stairways down, and you got walkways, and then if you look at picture five, I'm at one level, and here there's another whole mess of this resort, another whole building down below me.
Who the hell's paying for this upkeep of this place?
I don't know. Uh-huh. They certainly didn't make a whole profit on our lunch, even though I picked up the tab for the four of us, and it was like $380,000 of their currency, which was about 30 bucks Yankee money.
All right, next picture, number six. Fascinating picture of the inside. Look at the heavy timbering on the ceiling. Look at the walls, mortar and nice, I wouldn't call it flagstone, but it might be something like that. Again,
field
the arch.
Stone maybe?
What's that?
Maybe field stone?
Could be. And then the arches again. Look at the arch theme. And look at the tables.
There at that
look,
place.
Look how many tables there are.
Yeah. There was only two tables being used that particular day when we were there.
Places set for people.
Yeah.
The only thing missing is a bottle of Heinz ketchup. Look at that. All right. That room
beautiful
is...
beautiful place.
Yeah. Okay. Next.
Well, while we were there waiting for lunch, Franco and I went out, look at picture number seven, along that walkway.
Yeah.
And inside all those arches, there were windows, and it appeared like it was a big... hall, meeting hall inside.
All the arches to the left, you'll see, and you can see by the size of the chaise lounge next to the pool, which is lacking a bit of water, but there's a walkway above that, and on the left are all these arches. Look at them. All right, so inside, is that whole first and second floor open inside there?
Yeah, except those are all rooms, and the one on the main floor where we were walking, that's a big meeting hall, and it was locked. And we could see through, the drapes were pulled, but every so often there'd be a little gap in the drapes, and we could see through. There's a big meeting hall in there. Incidentally, the pool does need water. Remember, it's dead of winter down there.
Yeah. Right.
Even though there's no snow, it was only like 35 or 40 degrees, and it was cold.
Yeah, you kept making that point. I remember. All right. You'd write to me an email and say, it's cold as hell down here, or something like that.
Yeah. Well, I got on the plane here in Florida. It was 95 degrees. I got off the plane in Buenos Aires. It was 32.
Wow. All right. So number eight, is that part of the meeting hall?
Yeah. The door was locked to the meeting hall. And so we went back to our table, and then the food wasn't there yet, so I got up and wandered by the doorway, and our waitress came by, a nice older lady, and with my sign language, I asked her if she would open up and let me in. Oh, yeah, sure, no problem. She let me in, and eight is the entryway, and you see the little doorway open in the wall. That's the fuse block, and number nine is just...
I'm looking at the chairs in number eight. Look on the right-hand side, dear friends, and some of those chairs are clearly very old.
Yeah.
Right? All right.
Yeah. They don't throw anything away there, I guess.
No. Number nine.
Number nine is, it's being used for meetings nowadays, although I don't imagine there's any...
Who's there to have meetings?
Yeah, that's a good question.
Is there a town nearby here? A city?
No. No. The closest city is, oh my God, the closest city was hours away.
Ah, perfect place for a Wednesday night meeting then, I guess.
Yeah, right. Yeah, clandestine,
all right.
But not so much anymore, I don't think.
How strange, how unique, how interesting.
Yeah.
It's almost like a lot of people living in the surrounding countryside in a very rural setting might get together at that place for meetings once in a while.
Yeah, we're coming to that point shortly, but you're right on the button. Now, if you notice in number eight, that little doorway open in the wall, that's the fuse block.
Yeah.
And here, number 10, that's a close-up picture of the fuse block. And these are the fuses and stuff exactly like I've seen in old hotels in Germany.
Right,
like
old circuit breakers.
Tiger.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I'm not.
There's some new stuff on the top.
Right. New wiring.
Yeah, it looks like those are new circuit breakers, and they replace fuses in the old days.
Yeah. And they're all ceramic.
That's been rewired, all right. Look at that.
Yeah. So the lady was saying that they had meetings there all the time.
When was this? When would this have been? Meetings when?
In the 50s and 60s.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And she said they were singing strange songs, and so I started singing some of the German military songs, and oh, she brightened up. Yeah, yeah, that was it. And she said she saw Mengele there, Gestapo Mueller, Bormann, and Hitler. And she also said that Alberto Stroessner was there with these guys quite frequently. He was the president of
Argentina. Paraguay. Next door to Argentina. And that's it. When she said that, what was your reaction?
Not surprised.
No, I wouldn't think so. But did you tell her how amazing that is that she knew that? Now, she saw them there.
Yeah, she didn't seem amazed either. Like I say, down South America, they wonder why we're making such a big fuss about it, because they all know these guys were down there. It's not a big secret, like it is up here.
Now, would you say that if there were regular meetings with Bormann and Hitler and Mueller and so forth, that they all lived in the general vicinity of this central meeting place and had these get-togethers, or did they
probably within a couple of hundred miles of it. Mueller, we know he wound up living in Argentina. Mengele was very close by.
Hitler? Supposedly in Cordoba, but how far is Cordoba?
Well, Cordoba's not far from this area.
Uh-huh.
There's that finger of Argentina that sticks up between Paraguay and Brazil.
Uh-huh.
And Cordoba is up in the northern part. And Hitler allegedly was in Mendoza province as well. And they all crossed the Paraná River, Paraná, however you pronounce it, pretty frequently after Perón got knocked out of power, because their protection had pretty well gone away when Perón was gone. But they were so well hidden.
That's really amazing to think of those people living down there with the the blessing of the United States, the powers that be. We covered up for them. They're down there.
Yeah.
And they're
yeah.
getting mm-hmm. together at this place out in the middle of nowhere and having meetings. And there's an eyewitness. You talked to her. Did you have to show her any pictures of Bormann or Mengele or anybody, or did she just know them by name?
No, I didn't have any with me.
She knew them by name.
But they knew. As I told you in our last program, the lady in the museum in another little village there, when I mentioned what we were doing there and we were tracking Mengele, her face all clouded up, and she says, "I didn't like him." And she said, "He saved the lives of many people in the villages around here, but I didn't like him." And then I showed her a picture of my book, Hitler in Argentina. Oh, she got all smiley face. Ah, yeah, der Führer. She was born in Austria.
Wow.
But she had lived down there most of her life.
She liked him.
She seemed to have liked him, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But she didn't like Mengele,
mm-hmm.
or as they pronounce him down there, Mengele.
Mm-hmm.
Mengele. Who the hell's Mengele? Oh, you mean Mengele. Yeah, mm-hmm. Mengele.
Okay, here's Christian and Franco again.
Yeah, this is when we're waiting for our lunch. Really good. I had breaded chicken breast and some other stuff, white rice.
This is a big place, Harry.
It's a huge place. I'm guessing. That's all it is. I'm guessing. They got to have 200 rooms there.
Wow.
But we saw that other couple, and that was it.
Uh-huh.
And some people worked there, yeah. But, I mean, as far as customers?
Yeah.
Now, they couldn't have made much money on us for lunch.
Yeah, no. There's really no viable reason for a place like that to even exist. It must be funded, shall we say, by some unknown financial enterprise.
I would think that's a good guess. I don't have any information, but I would think that's a very good
look
guess.
Look at that. The next picture, 13. A beautiful little place out there. The
yeah.
greenery everywhere.
Well, yeah. between 13 and the next picture, which is kind of a bunged up 14, I shot those to show that this place is surrounded by the jungle. You can't get there easily unless you come in the front gate. You're not going to be chopping through that jungle. And way back in, I guess, the 60s, shortly after Eichmann had been kidnapped and taken back to Tel Aviv. Now, Eichmann was an easy grab. He had no money. He had no protection.
Mm-hmm.
He lived in Buenos Aires, the little house on Garibaldi Street. The house was 20 foot by 20 foot approximately. He and his sons built it. He rode 3 hours to work at the Mercedes factory where he was just a production worker.
Hmm.
And then he rode 3 hours back on the bus. So by the time he got home, he was pretty well wiped out.
Mm-hmm.
And so he was easy for the Mossad to grab and kidnap and take back to Israel. But, excuse me, shortly thereafter, in the 60s sometimes, we're told there were 5 Mossad agents popped up here to grab Mengele because he lived here. They didn't do so well. They wound up with their throats cut. Now, if that was in Chicago, my old hometown, we'd consider that just death by natural causes.
Right.
But here...
So they came to this place or this area?
No, to this place, we're told.
Uh-huh.
The waitress told us about it. And Mengele was well protected. And so these 5 Mossad agents...
Right.
Didn't have much success.
No, doesn't sound like it. Okay, number 15.
Oh, now we're getting to some interesting stuff. This is a little annex on a property.
Mm-hmm.
And then you look at number 16, and you see room number 28. The lady told us this was Mengele's room.
Permanently, whenever he showed up, that was his room.
Right. He did have another room, number 26,
uh-huh.
which had only one bed in it, And if he was by himself, he got room 26. If he had an entourage, he got 28 because there were four bunks, four beds in room 28.
All right. Picture number 17 is a looks like a king-size bed.
And yeah, that was one of the beds in room 28. There were three other single beds, and this one was a double.
Wow. All right.
And it's still in operation today.
Same bed, probably?
Well, I have no idea if it's the same bed, but the plumbing all looks pretty much from the old days. And this was where Mengele lived when he came into that area, which he did quite frequently. This was pretty much his base of operations, we're told.
Well, they must have all bitched about the roads getting there, but...
Well, God knows what the roads were like back in those days. They're horrible now, but they must have been just dirt roads back in those days.
Mm-hmm.
Now they're just paved with broken bricks, not even laid down smoothly, just kind of dumped. And like I say, Paraguay is all red clay.
Uh-huh.
The same kind of red clay that was allegedly found inside Bormann's skull when they dug him up conveniently in Berlin at the main train station.
So what you're saying is that he died perhaps in Paraguay, was buried there and was disinterred and made to reappear magically in Berlin?
Right. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And that because clay is from Paraguay. Okay.
Right. There's no red clay in Berlin.
Where is his where are his remains now, do we know?
I don't know. I think, but don't hold me to this one. I think that cremated and dumped.
Mm-hmm.
They don't like to have any of that stuff around for people to make a shrine out of or something like that. But they are so worried in Germany, they are so worried about shrines. The building, the apartment building where Hitler was born, the Austrian government was trying to buy it, and the lady who owns it wouldn't sell it, so they took her to court, and Austria's highest court, Supreme Court, there decreed that the government did have the right to seize the building, and they had to pay her some undisclosed amount of money, but now she's kicked it up to the more or less federal Supreme Court. Because, you know, Austria is not a sovereign country anymore, part of the EU, so they've got a higher court yet. So they want to various groups, Antifa, the Jewish groups, the liberals, they all want to just tear the building down. Other people want to leave it as a historical place where Hitler was born. And the lady who owns it just wants to have it as an apartment building so she can rent out apartments. But the Austrian government says they're going to just renovate the place and make it a shelter or whatever for handicapped people. But they're still wrestling in court.
Right. Well, there was some talk they were going to tear it down, too. So.
Right. Which they did with Hitler's home on the mountain, the Obersalzberg. The house was damaged in the bombing, and it just stayed like it was as long as the U.S. Army held control of Bavaria, but as soon as they turned it all back over to the Bavarian government, man, oh man, they were up there with the bulldozers and just took it down. Goering's house took it down. Bormann's house, they took it down. The only house they left standing was Speer's. And a lot of the other buildings were left standing, too. They didn't tear those down, but the three houses, boy, they were gone in the blink of an eye.
Well,
tearing down the buildings will change history, I guess. That's their theory.
Yeah, sure. the Eagle's Nest,
oh, yeah.
had they left those buildings standing, shrine or no shrine, imagine the tourism and the money and the revenue that they could have brought in.
Oh, yeah. They could have had, you know, just throw a fence around it and charge a certain amount of money to walk in and see the homes. They'd have made the cash register would never stop ringing. But who who knows, you know, I don't want to get into a political conversation here, but had to be torn down. It's evil, it says. And now, you know, I think I told you about 3, 4, 5 years ago, mm-hmm. somebody put up, the government, I guess, put up a sign where Hitler's home had stood.
Mm-hmm.
The old retaining wall is still there to keep the mountain from coming
sure.
down. There's talk they're going to break down the retaining wall to let the mountain just sweep over it.
Come
but
on.
Anyhow, yeah. And the great steps, you see the picture of Hitler greeting all sorts of dignitaries on the
yeah.
great steps. They're still there.
But they're
just
buried.
All covered up with dirt. You can't
yeah.
see them. They're covered up with 1 or 2 feet of dirt. But anyhow, they put up a sign there 3, 4 years ago, whatever it was, that this was the place where the final solution was planned, where the extermination of the Jews, et cetera,
oh,
and
please.
Conquest of the world.
Yeah. Yeah.
Every place Hitler stopped for, if he stopped to take a whiz, for Christ's sake, that's where it was all planned. You know, they kind of overdo it there. Well, take, for instance, Eichmann. You see reports of Eichmann, the one who engineered or who designed the final solution. He was the architect. No, he wasn't. He was just a lieutenant colonel who moved people around by the trains. Not saying he was good or bad, but he sure as hell was not the guy in charge. But, you know, the propagandists, the current modern-day propagandists, like to invent stories.
Well, already in this visit tonight, we've seen and heard some amazing things. That waitress was witness to history.
Yeah.
Some of the most remarkable figures in history in our lifetime,
yeah.
apparently, were
and
at that hotel.
And also that lady who ran the museum that we talked about last time. She
oh, yeah.
knew Mengele. She didn't like him, but...
Yeah, yeah. And, okay, when we get to the point where you understand who drew that picture, that first picture, and if you go back to it, it's a happy scene. Somebody who's greeting some other people at this particular place in 1962 or thereabout.
Yeah, and the pictures she drew in her scrapbook just tell a story how she and her mother were supposed to be shot, but somehow they were not shot, and then how they escaped. She drew a picture of an airplane, and there's a dead guard laying on the pavement and a pool of blood, and Dr. Karl Barnett is standing over the soldier with a pistol in his hand. You know, the rudimentary drawings, just like you see up there, but then they escaped that way, you know, according to this.
Who would the guard have been?
I don't know, but he was not very lucky because he wound up dead.
Soviet guard?
I don't know. It's
mm-hmm.
in the book. I haven't read through the whole book.
Right. It's only
1,300
pages, Harry.
Here.
What's the matter here?
I know. I waste an awful lot of time working.
Look what you have come up with. Yeah, again, more proof that these people, Mueller of the Gestapo, they lived. They lived their
yeah.
lives out. And this is part of the deal that the American government made with the Third Reich to make sure that we got that technology, which gave us a 10 to 15 year leap over everybody else. The only problem
yeah,
was a lot of the scientists ended up being captured and taken by the Soviets. So they had a leg up too.
Yeah, they had. It was a big race between the U.S. and the Soviets to get the scientists, the technology, the technicians, the engineers, etc. England got some of them too, but England didn't have anywhere near the bargaining power that the U.S.
Right.
or the USSR
and
had.
And let's not forget that the director of NASA, Dr. Kurt
yeah.
Debus, for
yeah.
12 or 13 years, was
yep.
part of Paperclip. He was a scientist, a brilliant man, and many others made it over here. Our
well,
space
Debus
program...
Debus hmm? Was in charge of the German rocket program.
Right.
Werner von Braun worked for him.
That's right. Same situation here.
Yep.
A genius of a scientist. And it's our space program was a German space program.
Yep. Yep. With German cameras.
I yeah.
could look down yeah, and read somebody's newspaper from way up in space.
Don't forget that the pictures that appeared in the Daily Fail recently are historically accurate. They're of Adolf Hitler in probably 1947.
Yeah.
With the Eichhorns at the hotel.
Hotel
that they
Eden.
Owned. The Eden Hotel. So we have pictures of Hitler after the war. He had his mustache, which surprised me, in the pictures. But it's him, and it's the Eichhorns.
Yeah.
And the only way those pictures could have been taken was if, in fact, Adolf Hitler was there.
Yeah.
Period.
Yep, that was released by Abel Basti. And Basti is an excellent researcher, but he's losing credibility down in South America because he has trailed a lot of the Third Reich people down in the area of Bariloche, which is in Patagonia. But now, according to him, Hitler was in Brazil, was in Uruguay, was in Paraguay, was in Peru, was in Schenectady, on the dark side of the moon. Every place you turn around, there was Hitler. So he's kind of diluting his impact.
Right.
And he apparently dug up these pictures, and instead of putting them together in some kind of logical format to tell a story, he runs right out. He's like a little kid that's got a new toy. Hey, look what I got. So, anyhow, there's a great historic photos. You gotta say that.
Yeah.
In the old, good old Daily Fail.
Okay, we're going to hold off on going any further in the pictures. I'm going to go back up to the very first one, and just to reprise this for you who may have joined us late, this unknown woman who we're going to identify in the next hour made drawings. She couldn't take pictures for the most part, so she drew what she experienced, and this is clearly labeled 1962, and it'll be fascinating to find out who is identified in that picture. We'll be finding that out in the next hour.
You bet.
Just amazing. Looks like perhaps the young lady who drew the picture would be, maybe she was walking toward the others who were at the hotel, and you can see that those arches are not blocked up there. They're not bricked over. They're open.
Right. Back then they were. But recently they bricked them up and just left a different entrance, which you see in picture number 3.
Got
nice
it.
Place, fascinating place. Huge, massive. The thing just, it goes up and down hills, and it just, I'm estimating, I bet you they got 200 rooms there. Plus they got meeting rooms, plus they got two outdoor pools.
Uh-huh.
But not being used at
and
that
time. And that waitress obviously had been working there for 60 years.
Long time.
Yeah.
I didn't get her name. Maybe Franco's got that. But Franco, send me an email. Tell me if you got the woman's name, because I know Franco and Christiane are listening.
Well, this is really an amazing discovery. Truly amazing. And it turns history, as the powers that be want us to believe it, on its ear once again, thanks to Admiral Cooper and his friends down there.
Well, one of
remarkable.
Our members who is currently deep in the spook business told me that Paraguay is a gold mine of undiscovered Third Reich history. So I got to keep going back. He also told me I was one of about 5 people in the world who does this research who's still alive. Okay,
yeah.
That's really a ringing endorsement.
I get that. Next time you go back, you're going to have to take some kind of padded cushions for the ride on the roads.
Yeah.
Something.
Either that or stand up.
Yeah. No, you don't want to do that. It's a beautiful place. It's got its own charm. I can see it.
Yeah.
Whoever designed it did a beautiful job. I'd like to see a real wide shot of it. Do you have a real big wide shot of the place?
No, it's just too big.
Uh-huh.
It's just too big. Probably wouldn't have hurt if we could have got up in an airplane and took an overview, but no airplanes.
Well, that was in our last program.
That's right. That was a drawing by the same young lady of the farm where she lived for a while. An aerial view, and she got it when Hannah Reich took her up in a plane over the farm where she lived.
And all this is in her book, which you will be able to buy on Kindle, and we're going to tell you how to do that next hour as well. So that's something. You can walk through history with somebody who was supposedly dead at the end of the war, but somehow was revived and transplanted to Paraguay. And
lots of dead people didn't really die when they were supposed to.
Yeah. Very good. All right. Well, we're going to pause on that note, come right back with Harry. Hour number two, lots ahead. So stand by. We'll be right back.